This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry, I was down a rabbit hole.
Ooh, tell me, what's the rabbit hole? Because I'm in a rabbit hole right now.
Oh, then tell me.
All right. So I don't know if you heard about this, but Action Comics 1000 sold like 500,000 copies.
I was at the panel, but I did not hear that.
Oh, no, they just announced it like yesterday, I think.
Okay.
So Action sold like 500,000 copies, and I was like, I want to read some Superman. And I had just finished doing this interview for this other podcast that I do, and I was like, oh, I want to find like something Superman that I haven't read before.
And you went on to the Road to Action Comics 1000 sale, and you bought old Action Comics.
No, I didn't do that. So what? I went online, and I was like, must read Superman stories. And I was like, eh, I've read all these already. That's boring. And right. I was like best creative runs of Superman. I was like, eh,
yeah.
I've read most of these. That's boring, too.
I was Jeff like, Johns and Gary Frank.
I was like, let me do like best Superman crossovers. And I found some, and I was like, all right, that's fine. Maybe I'll read some of those. And then I was like, let me just find something weird. And I was like, weirdest Superman crossovers.
Yeah.
And I found, matter of fact, I just tweeted about it. I found Superman versus Savage Dragon.
Dude.
And I'm going to read the shit out of this.
Oh, my Lord. They didn't instantly direct you to the Jimmy Olsen collection?
I've read a good chunk of that already.
It's so good.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It is very underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Like, I don't get when DC's doing all these celebration of 50 years, celebration of 75 years. And you, especially with Superman, you do Superman, sure, granted. Lois Lane, sure, granted. Lex Luthor, okay, I see that. Where's the Jimmy Olsen?
Where is the Jimmy Olsen?
Why does DC not love Jimmy Olsen?
Is that the episode title?
Sure.
Why is that?
I don't know. That's my question to you and the listener.
I mean, like, he's around.
Yeah, but those old Jimmy Olsen, same with, like, I mean, it's great to see Lois Lane getting her celebration of. But I want Jimmy Olsen.
You think, like, they don't think he's important enough to do?
Okay, let me throw this out to the number one Batman fan of the Nerdy Legion Network.
Oh, who's that?
Jay? Martin Ferretti. Jay's, yeah, actually, he could give you a run.
He could.
But that's here nor there. The number one fan, okay, how about this? I'll redo it so we don't offend Jay. The number one Batman fan of the Nerdy Legion Network who is currently recording an episode of Nerdy Legion on the comfy couch with me.
Nick Wetmore.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That would be you. Okay, going back to the celebration. Do you think DC thinks that Jimmy Olsen is as minor of a character as Alfred is to the Batman universe?
No, dude, no. All right. First of all, Alfred is not a minor character in the Batman universe.
He is. No, let me quantify what I was going to say.
Okay, I was about to get angry. I was about to jump through this mic.
Alfred does not have celebrating 75 years of Alfred.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy Olsen does not have his own celebrating 75 years of Jimmy Olsen. And it drives me, but Jimmy Olsen had his own comic book.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't tell me that Alfred does not have enough titles regarding all of the bad events, all that they couldn't make celebrating 75 years of Alfred. Maybe it wouldn't sell. I don't know. But the Jimmy Olsen stuff, it was really hard to find for a while there. And then all of a sudden, what, 5-10 years ago, they released that Jimmy Olsen trade. It boggles my mind, but it also boggles my mind that DC doesn't think enough to do celebrating 75 years of the Riddler either.
Well, see, and this is why we now all understand, finally, listeners, that Grant Morrison is the greatest writer of the common era, because Grant Morrison made Jimmy Olsen a key character in his Superman story.
Yep.
See? Problem solved. Yep, we fixed it.
Yep. I know.
We fixed comics.
I mean, I hate to say it, Jimmy Olsen had just as much to do in Grant Morrison's Superman than Superman and Lois.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was pretty vital.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It just blows my mind.
It blows my mind too. You know what they should do? They should do a Jimmy Olsen celebration. And then what year are we in? 2018. In 8 years. 20 slate clean. In 8 years, they should do the 100-year celebration of Jerry Lewis, who also had a very long-running comic over at DC Comics. And it'll be his 100th birthday in 2026.
And another thing that would probably blow me away is that there are more Jerry Lewis comics than there was Jimmy Olsen comics, which is very scary.
How many issues did Jimmy Olsen run?
It's certainly nowhere near Jerry Lewis, which when you ran that quiz by me, I was floored when we went down that rabbit hole.
Oh, man. Let's find out, because now I have to know. No, dude, Jimmy Olsen won. Superman's Did pal, he? Jimmy Olsen, 163 issues.
Holy cow. So that even makes me more pissed.
Yeah, that book ran for 20 years.
How is there not a celebrating Jimmy Olsen? There's been some good modern Jimmy Olsen. I don't get it. Oh, DC.
That's because they ruined them in the CW TV show.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But still, darn it.
Yeah. Yeah, in the TV show, they made him a guardian. And then he was like, I don't know if he was dating Supergirl, but they weren't dating. And then I got bored and I quit watching the show.
Is so DC like,
you
gonna
effed
do...
up Jimmy Olsen, how dare you?
is DC going to do a celebration of Snapper Carr when he was in the JLA? Is that what we can expect?
Oh my goodness, it's possible.
It sure is.
Possible.
Hey, but going back to the Action 1000, did you see the Lopez?
Oh my god, did I ever.
Oh, those were so sweet. In black and white and projected probably 15 feet across.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mama mia.
Yeah, yeah. I briefly mentioned that on today's Comic Talk Today. Shameless plug.
Oh, good for you.
Because, it's fucking beautiful, dude. Why is he not doing a book? Like, I know he's got that story. It's not even an action. Is it an action? I thought the one he was doing was in that DC Nation book.
It might be in the DC Nation.
Yeah.
But dude,
they need to like give him work.
During that panel, they did go through like all of the Celebration comics. So I think it was.
Oh, okay. I mean, look at Lee Weeks, dude. Lee Weeks is doing arcs on Batman. Why can't they have Garcia Lopez doing arcs of Action?
Well, Bendis said that that was the first thing he did when I believe it was Didio reached out to him and said, what creative, people do you want to work with? And he said one of his first names was Lopez. Then Didio reached out and came back to Bendis and said he would be up for it. It might take him some time because I guess he's pretty slow. But he felt, very honored to be asked to do, something pretty, pretty huge in the pantheon of like DC history.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
But still, honest to God, when I saw that, like, I was ready to applaud. It looked so pretty. And they showed like a lot of modern artists, which, I won't go into, but comparing modern art to what he's doing, there's just no comparison. Like you can see the computer stuff. You can see when they showed like covers or splash pages of modern artists, and it's like sometimes the inking or the colors sort of mute how dramatic it is. And you see his, and it's like, there's no way somebody's going to ink that wrong. They just won't. You know, it will be very thick lines. It will be very distinct. Like, there is no wasted space there. Instead, like, you look at the modern work and like, there's all these shadows and like gradation of shadow going across. You know, it's like, it muddies it where it's just, oh my God, Lopez looked, especially in black and white. And you know me, I love color. I follow probably as many colorists on Twitter as I do actual artists. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Like, I love them, but to see his stuff done in black and white, it's like, where is that showcase? Mm-hmm. Like, I want that phone size, like, cheap paper showcase of his artwork. Oh.
Well, you remember when I went to Heroes last year, I went to that Lopez and Lee Weeks panel.
Yes, I did. And they were live sketching.
Yeah, they were live sketching, dude. It was amazing. Amazing. Oh.
But sorry for skipping around. But during Tom King's Batman panel, somebody did ask him about Lee Weeks. And all Tom King said was, if Lee Weeks wanted to do Elmer Fudd for 60 issues, I would write Elmer Fudd. Like, just get more Lee Weeks out there. And even all of the artists were just like, yeah, Lee Weeks, unbelievable, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting on the action panel, they had Jill Thompson, Clayman. I'm going to forget a couple of the artists, but they all went down the line and said, who's like, when you think of Superman in your head, who drew that? And, you know, some of the artists would be like, oh, John Byrne or George Perez or, sure, you know, Lopez. And the one that I thought was really interesting was Jill Thompson said it was World's Finest, Steve Rude.
Oh, wow.
I know. And then I like pulled up a couple pages when I got home and I was like, yeah, I do sort of picture, you know, that it's so iconic. Like, man, Steve Rude, holy Christ.
What's he up to nowadays?
The last I heard was from that movie, The Dude.
Yeah, because he did a Kickstarter for Nexus, I think, last year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the year before. But I don't even know if that came out.
I don't know if it was funded all the way.
Oh, man. You're right, dude. I'm looking at these three Rude pages. They're fucking nice.
Yeah. And it is some beautiful, beautiful. And, God, who the hell drew it? I can't think. Oh, I want to say Patrick Gleason. That his story, maybe it was in Action 1000, but his story was like taking, it was all splash pages of like Superman through the ages. And I guess his children started to fall in love with Superman over the past couple of years. So whenever he got his comped issues, the kids would be like eagerly awaiting to like open them up and look through them. They weren't old enough to read them, but they wanted to flip through them. So when he was doing all these splash pages, which I'm almost positive it was for 1000, that Gleason said that his son came up to him and said, you know, Dad, and he was drawing like the World War II Superman with the real small S. Mm-hmm. And his son was like, Dad, you know, Daddy, you drew the S wrong. And it's so crazy. And like all of the panel was like, yes, I have drawn that S. Like that, like, you know how to draw that S. It is like burned into your head. It's such an icon.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved hearing like how much, you know, how these people, and they all could be sort of jaded, but they're all like, no, we're all fans of Superman. We all want like Superman to be successful and to have a comeback and to be as popular as he was, like, in the Golden Age. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, just to hear that. Made me feel good. Might actually have to run out this weekend and pick that issue up.
Well, you know, Superman right now is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird that they're just doing this thing. I get it.
Even Bendis with Gleason there, even he said the great thing about when he took over Daredevil, it was like when Frank Miller took over Daredevil. Daredevil was about to be canceled. So when Frank Miller took it over, he could either bring it to the heights that it went to, or guess what? If the title gets canceled, and it was going to be canceled anyway. And he goes, that's the hardest thing with Superman. It wasn't good for so long. And then I get Superman and I'm following probably the most popular Superman's been since John Byrne took over.
Isn't that sad though? You have like at least a full generation that's like, yeah, Superman, whatever.
Yeah, it's real sad. But I've told you since day one, he's never hit me except for the last 3 years, maybe. I never really understood him. And then here I am watching Batman versus Superman and Justice League, and the parts that I'm crying at is during Lois Lane and Superman and Clark parts. Like, yeah, I totally see it now. And maybe it took like modern people showing me what makes him special. I don't know.
You know, I think sometimes it's just, it's like really tough to put a solid creative team that people will find relatable on something, you know? I know I talked about that on that other show I do when I read the new Mother Panic. Jody Hauser writes that book, and Jody does the Faith book at Valiant.
Sure.
And you know, me and Faith are like oil and water. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hate that book.
Yep.
But
we know you have issues. You've always had issues with it, but yeah.
Yeah. But reading Mother Panic is just so refreshing because it's so different, right? And there's so many people that are like, oh, well, F this person. Like, I won't read anything they do because blah, blah, blah. Or like, F this, F that because, I don't know. Bendis can't write Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones is a woman. I'm like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it might take a while to find the right person for the right book. But when you find it, like, it's so good. You know what I'm saying? Like, when it really clicks, it's really special.
Can I quote another podcast?
Oh, yeah.
All right. There's this podcast I listen to, Comic Talk Today.
Never heard
and
of it.
It's pretty good. You should check it out. It's on Nerdy Legion.
Nah, fuck those guys.
No. He does very like bite-sized, concise little episodes. They're really nice.
Right,
you're in, you're out.
I'll check it out.
Not like this babble fest of 2 hours sometimes.
Oh, this is the best.
No, it's not. It's way too long. But anywho. The host, Martin, was talking to this subject a while ago, and it sort of fits in, and maybe this is where you're going with Mother Panic. Like, it took Tinian to get a hold of, finally, a title that, like, he can latch on to. Not that he doesn't love the Batman family, but it's completely different when... And I get Bendis, like, I'll take Daredevil, because... the sales stink. So it's going to be a nice way for me to express my like crime noir passion. But then he turns that around. But then you can also see like when Bendis first took over like X-Men, he in interviews, he said he's always wanted to do X-Men. And then all of a sudden he gets a chance. I don't know if he always wanted to do the original X-Men, because that's sort of what his run turned into. I'm not sure. But he had an interesting approach to it at the beginning. I don't know if he actually wanted that title to go on as long as it did for him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But it's always interesting when you hear somebody like Tim Seeley. Maybe Tim Seeley's always wanted to do John Constantine. I don't know. It seems like a perfect fit for me. You know, or Tom King doing Omega Men. Like, he'll be the first one to tell you that thing didn't sell at all.
Oh, but it was always, so good. I loved it.
But and he even said in the Batman panel, he's like, but I always wanted to do it. So I didn't care that it didn't sell.
Yep.
And I like that. I like when somebody's passionate enough to be like, you know what? I want to take over this title because I like X, Y, and Z character.
Yeah. And who cares if nobody likes it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be so awesome, dude. Like, regardless of what I think of Tom's run, like, can you imagine, like, me, like, if somehow I were a comic book writer and somehow I were given the chance to write Batman, like, mm-hmm. no doubt I would fuck that shit up. But I would shit my pants because I got the chance to read Batman or to write Batman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, but wouldn't you also poop your pants because, oh my God, what if I mess up this character?
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, that would give me stage fright to write, like, Spider-Man. That would freak me the hell out.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine the amount of pressure. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's got to be tough for anybody.
And at that point, wouldn't you just turn off your social? Like, you know, even if you're killing it, you're killing it. If Frank Miller was writing Batman back in the day and social was as prevalent as it is today, you know how many people would be going after him? Mm. Like, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people love to be contrarians and negative.
Yep.
It's like, God forbid you like something.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's like, you love comics, but then everything that comes out of your mouth is negative and hateful. Like,
yeah, how can you say you love comics if you just fucking talk bullshit all the time?
Right.
Like, there's nothing wrong with, like, creative criticism.
Sure.
But, like, bashing people? Fuck that.
I'm completely in agreement.
That's ridiculous.
Did you see, sticking with comics, did you see the tweet that Listen, I retweeted?
I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm going to interrupt you.
Oh.
There's an issue with this podcast right now.
Uh-oh.
And the problem is, there was way too much funny book talk in these last couple of episodes.
What?
There is way too much funny book talk.
I did just come back from C2E2. We sort of have to talk about that.
I know. I love the comic book talk. I mean, I love all the bullshit we do. But you know me. Uh-huh. I love me some motherfucking comic. God, we're potty mouth. I'm potty mouth tonight.
You are. I'm very nice.
Listen, I just talked to two awesome creators, and they were cussing, and I was like, well, you know what? F it.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Put in the duck sounds.
Nope, no duck sounds. Raw and uncut. Anyways, you were saying?
A couple days ago, I retweeted, I think it was from... And I know I'm going to butcher this, but it was like Comic Book Today Twitter account.
Yeah, these guys got to stop. There's too much talk of this Comic Book Today on this podcast.
All right, I'll stop.
All right, let's continue.
No, they were just remarking that, like, on this day, DC canceled, I want to say it was Weird Western Tales or Jonah Hex.
Mm.
Because of low sales numbers in 1989, I want to guess. And then they said, and the low sales numbers, 257,000. You know where Jonah Hex or Weird War Tales would be today? Holy Christ.
That is amazing.
Yeah, too low, too low.
Too low.
Oh my God.
What year was that though? You said 85, right?
It was like 87, 89, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It's just like how crazy.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. The number one book doesn't even get that high nowadays. Usually it's like right above 100,000.
That's why I had to retweet that thing. I was just like, oh my God.
That's hilarious. Oh. Yeah, that's an awesome Twitter account, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I love
it. Just has little, it has little tidbits like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like on this day, George Perez and Marv Wolfman started Teen Titans. Like it's It gives you a nice little like space of time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I love it.
Without any leaning or bent to it, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you hear this whole thing about Stan Lee?
I have only read a little bit on it.
What the F is going on over there, dude? I'm waking up every day now, and I'm like, what the F is happening over there? Just like with everything.
You could be doing each of your daily episodes just on the Stan Lee crisis.
Dude, it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm living in multiversity or something.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty shameful.
It is shameful. But good for Kevin Smith, dude. Like that's pretty stand up of him. I mean, like if I was Kevin Smith, I'd be like, Stan Lee, come live at my house too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, fuck it. Like, we're on this podcast. Stan Lee, if you want to come live at my house, like, by all means.
But doesn't Kevin Smith sort of rub you that way? Like, if any of his wife's relatives or his relatives needed a place to stay, he'd be like, yeah, come on by. Like, he just sounds that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, how many people would be able to just be like, hey, Stan Lee, come live with me?
Right.
Aside from Kevin Smith and, like, a handful. Like, literally a handful of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's crazy that, like, nobody at, like, that... Is that Marvel is saying anything? I haven't heard anything, at least.
Same here.
And that's just so weird. And, like, you know, part of me wants to be like, well, look, like, Stan Lee exploited a lot of people. Like, he did Kirby really wrong. He's made, like, millions and millions of dollars. And, like, you know, where's that money? But at the same time, like, I'm thinking, like, you know, this dude's 95. Like, he's probably totally senile, and his daughter is a wife, fucking bitch.
His wife just passed away two years ago.
Yeah,
it's shameful.
It is shameful. This podcast is shameful.
But I did just hear, I was talking to a coworker today, and her father's family is from Italy.
Okay.
And their father is still alive right now in Italy, he has his own place that the youngest brother moved into to help him out. Mm. And so my coworker's father is here, and then his sister is also in America. Mm. And they found out 2 weeks ago that the youngest brother moved without telling anyone, moved their father into a home, and his home's being paid by the grandfather's pension as the youngest son just lives in that home and freeloads.
Holy crap.
It's like, yeah. So if you think Stan Lee is, oh, they did that because he's uber rich. No, I think this happens quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sad.
That's just so crazy, man.
Like, how could you live with yourself?
Yeah, that reminds me of these people that live near my in-laws. So, like, the street that my in-laws live in, they're, like, way out in the boondocks in the country. Mm-hmm. And, like, 90% of that street is owned by my wife's family.
Gotcha.
And, but, like, there's other families that live there, mostly, like, from land that they bought from my wife's family. And there's this couple that lives in, like, it's like a half an acre that they bought. And they bought not a trailer, like a Winnebago type thing, you know, like a motorhome.
Sure.
And they moved their motorhome there because they're like in their 60s. They're both retired. And
probably put it up on blocks and like,
yeah, exactly.
It's stationary. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, if they want to drive somewhere, they can because it's a motorhome. Not a motorhome, like, you know what I mean? Like, what's it called? Like a camper type thing.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways.
I think Winnebago was right.
Yeah, Winnebago. Okay, we'll stick with that. And the reason they went out over there is because, like, their grown-ass son lost his job, and, like, his whole family moved in. And, like, that's fine, right? I understand, like, the economy's tough sometimes, people lose their jobs,
for sure.
Like, you need family help. That I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
But like, the whole family moved in, and then like his brother lost his job, and like their whole family moved in.
Wow.
And like, they weren't even trying to go find work. Like, they were just living in their parents' house with their entire families. And so these people are like, you know what? F you guys. We're both retired. We're out of here. We're going to go live in the boonies in this Winnebago. See you later. Mm-hmm. Well, wow. Guess what happened? They weren't taking care of the house. The house was destroyed.
I was going to say, there's two ways this is either going to go. They moved into the Winnebago in the boonies, or they're in this place so long that all of a sudden they get quote unquote squatters' rights.
Well, so
which is freaking ridiculous. That blows, yeah. Every time I hear that, it just blows me away.
Well, so they stayed in their parents' house with all their families while the parents moved out to live in this Winnebago. The house was freaking destroyed, and the parents are like, well, you know what, you guys aren't taking care of the house, we're gonna sell the house. So they fixed it up. Wow. They sold the house. Guess what, they don't have anywhere to go because neither of them is working. So where do they go? To the Winnebago.
Wow. I get hard times, like you say, but then there's some people that they just are wired that isn't an issue.
No, that's just like taking advantage of people. That's wrong.
And knowing that you can take advantage of your parents, especially.
Yeah, but dude, like, these people are in their 60s, man. Like, they've already done all that. You know what I'm saying? Like, quit.
But I'm just saying, there's some kids that are just wired that, oh, I always have mom and dad as a safety net. So no matter what happens, or I become, you know, addicted to drugs or whatever, like, hard times, I will move in with my, like, if I, God forbid that if that ever happened to me, where I lost my job, I lost Liz, would I debate, oh, I can move in with mom or dad? Sure. Might I do that? Sure. To get on my feet. But I would also have an end date of, I'm here for whatever, a year. Mm-hmm. I'm saving up every bit of money and I'm going to help pay bills. Or if I don't have a job, I'll be like helping out. And then saving money, trying to get a better job so I can move out. Like, I would have an end date, where a lot of these people are just like, there is no end date.
Yeah, my wife's got a friend like that. She went to high school with him. And he and his wife met, I think they met in high school. They got married when they were like 18 or 19. Now that they've got two kids. And they've always, like, he's never moved out of the house. When they got married, she moved in. And of course, now the kids are there. And by this point, like, this has been, how long ago since I was in high school? 18 years?
5 years.
No, I'm not my wife. I'm okay with my age.
The young Martin Ferret.
18 years since I was in high school. So they've been just living there for 18 years. And by this point, like, they're not going to go somewhere. They're just kind of living there until his parents die, and they'll just take over the house.
Do you think... And I'm sure there are plenty of cultures and plenty of people that the entire family lives in one under one roof.
Oh, for sure.
That's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I've known people like that. But if you're not from that culture or not have grown up with that, do you think that the person that you just referenced, do you think that the parents are thinking to themselves or saying it to the son, hey, you have to get out of here? What's your goal here? Or do you think once they have kids, then they're just like, well, what are they going to do? They can't afford to move out now, and at least we can babysit for them. You think it just gets to a point where it's like, we're never going to be able to afford to move out?
I mean, I don't know, dude. Like, they both work. He works for, never mind. I'm not going to say where he works for. He works for a telecommunications company, so it's not like he doesn't have money.
They get paid a decent wage.
Yeah, they do. I mean, like, they're not... They're like lower middle class, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
If they wanted to, they could get their own place.
It's very convenient just to be with mom and dad.
Sure, sure.
And hey, wouldn't you want to move in? Guess what? If Nelson was an unbelievable cook. Yeah, okay. Now I can move in and daddy will cook me all of my food and make my lunch before going off to work. You know, it's like all of a sudden, maybe it's the mindset of like, I'm back in high school and mom and dad will take care of me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right,
I'm not built that way. Like I said, I could envision myself, and especially like I could envision my mom being like, you and Liz move in with us, even just for a year, get your feet under you, especially if you're like 20 years old. Come on, you're not making that much money.
Yeah.
And I would love it if a parent would like give you a hand up, just like stay here, you know, start building your career, save for a house. Because now you don't have to put that money, you don't have to flush it down the drain with rent.
Mm-hmm.
And like, as a parent, I would totally offer that to my child. But I'm sure I would have a caveat of like, this is going to go for 1 year, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
2 years, you got to get the F out.
Well, yeah, dude, like, all right, if you didn't have bills to pay for a year, you'd have more than enough to put a down payment on a house.
For sure.
Like cash, straight up cash.
Yes.
That's crazy.
But these people are probably the same people that if they were in that situation, guess who's taking two or three pretty expensive trips?
Oh, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Instead of saving that money, let's go to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Like their head's not screwed on straight would be my guess.
So I was just trying to look up our
but
geographical...
You would do that for you. You would do that for your daughters. I know you would.
Oh, sure, sure, of course. But, like, to a certain extent, right?
Well, you're not going to be looking at your daughter and being like, you've been in this house since you graduated at age 20. You're 35 now. You know, like, I don't see you dealing with that for 15 years. Like,
no.
There's no way you haven't been on your feet. It doesn't take 15 years to get on your feet.
Well, and I mean, I would hope that I would have raised my kids better than that also. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm trying to think. My grandparents were fairly young when they left their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I think my dad was like 16 when he went out on his own. My mom was like 16 or 17 when she got married to my dad. So it would have been around that time. And then I left my parents' house and I was 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, I think that's fine. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's, like, fairly typical for at least the U.S. We're like,
sure.
You want to stay through college? Like, that's fine. But after college, like, you've got your education. You've been working, hopefully, for a couple of years. Like,
mm-hmm.
You got to go.
Yeah, I would say my parents weren't pushing me out the door. But there was an unwritten rule of you graduate college, you can stay here for a little bit, but you got to find a job. And when you get that job, you move the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was no, yeah, stay here for an extra year, pay off your college loan. No, get the hell out and figure that out yourself.
Yeah.
But I mean, come on, it's a little different. Like our work ethics are a little different than shit, even people from my generation, your generation.
Oh, sure.
I don't know too many people that would have college loans or a wife and kids that you're supporting. And the option is, well, I'm just going to have two jobs because I have to make ends meet. I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, I see a lot of people that I work with that are pretty young. Like this is their first job out of college. And I could never imagine them like, I need to get a job at Target so I can pay off my loan and I can have some walking around money. And I might not be out there like every weekend at the bars, but guess what? I'm doing something very logical. No.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I don't see that work ethic. I don't see like, I need to have two jobs right now for the interim for the next 5 years just to get my, you know, get my footing. I don't see any 25 that I'm working with right now, I don't see them ever thinking they would look at a job at Target like that's beneath me. No way.
Sure, but like to a certain extent, right? So, like, if I was laid off and I couldn't find anywhere to go, like, Target wouldn't be the first place I would apply to.
But no, like, no. I'm saying as a second job.
Oh, as a second job. Okay, I got
I'm
you.
Saying that's how they're looking down sure, on it. Right, like, right. I don't need no second job. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's different throughout the world, right? So, like, my family, sure. My family's, you know, mostly Spanish and Italian, and so the family dynamics are different than in, like, just a straight-up, like, Anglo-Saxon family, right? Where you have, like, the two kids, the kids grow up, they go do their own thing. Like, the very Puritan way that, you know, people in the U.S. raise their kids stems back a very long time from, like, this tradition of, like, that's how it is, right? Like, very hard work ethic. When you are old enough to be on your own, you're going to be on your own. And that's not true of a lot of places, right? Where, like, even if you're not living in the same house, which in a lot of these cultures you will be, I was just looking at, like, our geographic listenership. And we've got, like, we got a good chunk of people in, like, Southeast Asia that listen to the podcast. And, like, the culture there is also very different, right? Because in particular, like, once you get out of China, like, below China in that Southeast Asian region, I think that's more normal. In, like, India, that's very normal, right? Like, you might have, like, three generations of people living in the same house. And, like, that's fine. But, you know, at the same time, like, the economics are different, right? Like, in many ways, you kind of have to have a bunch of people living together to make the economics make sense, right? Where, like, it feels like, at least here in the U.S., like, you're able to have just a couple in a household make enough for everybody. And so once you have a situation that pops up like that, it just feels like you're kind of taking advantage of the situation. You know, and maybe if we're, like, in a different country, it'd be different. But at least in, like, here in the U.S., I would say probably in Canada and the majority of Europe, that's not the case at all.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. It's tough. And, but to bring it back to the topic that started this whole thing, sorry, listeners, like, that makes me wonder about, what's her name, J.C. Lee? Stan Lee's daughter? Like, what the fuck? Right? Because, like, surely, I mean, I'm sure she's had jobs, but surely she's never really had to work a day in her life. You know what I'm saying?
Completely agree.
Like, I don't think there's been in the last, I don't know how old she is. We'll just say she's, like, 50. I'm sure in the last 50 years, she's probably older than that. I'm sure in the last 50 years, like, Stan Lee has never been really hard up for money. Right? Like, even when Marvel was going through the bankruptcy, like, Stan Lee was getting, like, $5-6 million a year.
Sure.
Just because he was Stan Lee. You know? And, like, sure, he's a smart business guy, and he's negotiated a lot of his contracts to allow for that kind of money. But, like, that's Stan Lee's money, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's earned it.
Sure.
Has the daughter? Debatable.
Yeah, debatable.
Yeah.
I mean, depends who you ask, right? But, like,
yeah, I would love to know how many years of partying she had. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, dude. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So,
it's bizarre.
It is. I don't get it. But, you know, good for Kevin Smith. And I think, like, for him, it's really personal, too, right? Because Stan Lee was in, what was it, Mallrats?
Yep.
That he popped in on? So, like, he's loaned Stan Lee for a long time.
As well as, what, three videos? That were the, like, you know, hour-long chats with Stan Lee. He moderated those.
Yeah. So he's known Stan for a long time. And for sure. Like, good for him, man. Like, if I could, if Stan Lee would want to live in my house, I'd invite him. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's.
I'd bring him nacho fries every day.
Very sad.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But it seems to be like there's a lot of that lately, man. Like I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but I know we talked about Mesner Loebs, for example, and like that shit was pretty sad too, you know.
Yeah, and that was brought up during one of the panels.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was to Mark Waid. Hmm. They were asking him why. What was it? Hero Alliance.
Yeah.
His charity. Why it would take a charity, not just his, but a charity so long to react to someone put in that position. And to Mark Waid's credit, you know, he even said it's not like they didn't reach out to him multiple times, but at some point, this isn't just a charity for him. It's a charity for a lot of the older creators.
Yeah. See, that's good, dude.
And I totally get that, because guess what? I've dealt with this in my immediate family. I've dealt with addiction in my family. And it's like, no matter how much you want to help them, you're either going to be dragged down there 100% trying to offer as much assistance and help and love, or they're just going to drag you down. Like, yeah. It's one of those things that's like, I totally get if he's in charge of, you know, this group. Yes, you could give him all of your money every year. But guess what? If it's something with Loeb's wiring that he just does not want that help, then all you're doing is like giving this money to somebody who's not going to try to better themselves. Mm. You know, and there could be other creators out there that need it for like medical emergencies or, you know, guess what? I'm sure there's plenty of creators that get hit by like hurricanes in Florida.
Sure.
And could that money be used there? You know, I totally got his point. I totally understood where he was.
Well, and the thing you got to remember too is like these guys are contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they're not getting 401ks or health insurance or life insurance or anything like that. So if for whatever reason, like an emergency happens and they haven't been consistently working in comics for years, chances are like they don't have any way to support themselves.
Yeah, and that's why I like the Hero Initiative. Those are big charities that try to help them out. You know, they don't have the NFL Association, you know, Players Association helping old players. Like, they have millions upon millions of dollars. That's right. Why whenever you see those buckets for, you know, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund at cons, you know, guess what? You have $3 in your pocket. You can't even buy a Starbucks coffee for that. Throw it in that bucket. It's going to mean more to those people that are going through some hardships.
Yep.
Yeah, it was very telling. Like I said, that Mark Waid panel was probably the most insightful panel I've been to in years.
Well, and that's the same thing with like Neil Adams, right? We always make fun of a friend of the show, Neil Adams, because of his gigantic booths at conventions.
he has to match his ego. So.
But like the thing about him is like Neil's done a lot of things for like creator rights over the years. You know what I'm saying?
Like, the amazing thing about Neil Adams, which I wish there was a documentary on him, and I'm sure he would happily welcome a documentary on him. But I would love to watch a documentary because the shocking thing with Neil Adams is he was doing all of those advocacy projects of his when he was at the top, the zenith of his popularity.
Yeah.
Not when he was on the downslide, not when he was, remember Neil Adams? Oh yeah, he was pretty big 20 years. No, like when he was at his most influential was when he was using the power to motivate and lift other people up and struggle for their rights. Like he should be applauded and celebrated, not just for his work in comics.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
And hence why we all love Batman. Come on now.
God, it all goes back to Batman, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What keeps the wheel turning.
Hell yeah.
Have you watched Krypton yet?
I have not.
Okay, I have not either. And I really want to watch it because I'm hearing so many different things.
Is it bad that I... How many previews have you seen of it?
Zero.
Oh, okay. I've seen two trailers, two commercials. Is it bad that all I'm hearing from various people of like Krypton just isn't catching with me? It down to like, that's probably the most positive I've heard. Down to, oh, it's garbage. Don't even waste your time.
Hmm.
But
that bad, huh?
But the two trailers I've seen, I listen to the criticism and I'm like, no, this is probably pretty good. Like, it looks good. Like, it seems like something that I would like to latch on to.
Yeah, I think it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about, like, the... What is it? Zor-El, right? I'm not sure about mm-hmm. Zor-El and, like, Zod's mom's relationship thing. I've heard about that. But, like, okay. Other than that, I'm okay with it. I'm very, like, the most interesting thing to me about the show is what they appear to be doing with Adam Strange. It's like,
oh yeah,
when has Adam Strange ever been on any kind of TV or movie? Like, never, right? Pretty sure it's never.
Not that I recall.
And, like, Adam Strange is a really interesting character, and I don't ever hear anybody say, like, oh, I would love to work on an Adam Strange comic. You know what I'm saying? Like, why is that? Like, Adam Strange is a pretty cool character.
Isn't that shocking?
Yeah.
Oh, and also, did you ever finish Starman?
No. I'm close, but I'm not that
close. Because Adam Strange is in, I think it's the last arc of Starman,
oh,
or second
God,
to the last.
Really?
And James Robinson, he put his like finger on the pulse of what Adam Strange is. It's really, really good.
Hmm.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, he has, there's such a duality with him. It's perfect for television.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. It is not just a man out of time. It's like a man in two places out of time. Like, it's so good. Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of those characters were acquired in the 50s. So many of them have gone by the wayside. You know, where like, I think by now they're just kind of forgotten. And I wonder if Adam Strange isn't one of those characters. Because I mean, like, dude, when DC bought what was it, Charlton? Did they get Fawcett or was that Marvel? It doesn't matter.
No, they got Fawcett.
They got Fawcett too.
They got
right?
Fawcett. Yeah,
like all those characters that were being acquired from smaller publishers during that era. Very few of them. You still see, like, you might see a couple pop up here and there, like, as guest appearances for something, in a story. But the majority of them, like, you never see, you know, and nobody ever talks about them. And I wonder if we're gonna come to a time, like, everybody wants, like, diversity in comics, like, give me, like, you know, more varied races and ethnicities and sexual orientations and this and that.
Yep.
And so we create new characters, but like, what about all those characters that nobody gives a shit about? You know, like, there's so many cool stories that you could tell with all these characters that nobody
don't
uses.
You...
And so, you know what? And the weird thing is, some of them, like, they don't even give a shit to even try to do new stories.
Don't you think that they were trying to do that with, like, Earth 2?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Like, making Green Lantern gay, changing up gender, you know, it's like they were trying something different, but I totally get your point. Like, there were so many different Flashes and I loved all of them. Same with Green Lanterns. I loved all of them, but what's wrong with having, even if you want to change up like the old timey Green Lantern, but why not keep that his weakness is wood, you know what I'm, or yellow, or you know what, I'm, like it, it's almost like you modernized out all of the quirks, all the things that make those characters so different,
right?
And it's just like they almost crisis that out, like all these crises just sort of like, let's take out all of the weirdness and just give you, like, here's the subset of the three characters of Flash that you like. Now it's all into one character. Here's three things that you like about Superman, all into one character. Where for me, I want Superboy, I want Superman, I want the, you know, the 10 different Superman that are out there. Like, guess what? Make one gay, make one a woman, make one a, you know, it doesn't matter to.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, I agree.
That's why I look at Spider-Man. That's why Spider-Man's so perfect. Because any ethnicity, any sex, any religion, any preference can be underneath that mask. It wasn't just made for me, a white boy from the suburbs. Like Spider-Man, under that mask, he could be, you know, he could be anybody. It could be a woman. It could be a gay woman. It doesn't, like, it could be anyone that you could imagine under that mask. And that's exciting.
And so that's when you get characters that have such large supporting cast too, right? Because, so Spider-Man is one of those, right? And then Batman would be the other one. Because, like, it's not even just about, like, anybody could be under the mask. But the way that those characters' personalities are, it could be anybody, period. Right? Because, like, when you have Spider-Man, you have, like, Spider-Girl, Spider-Gwen, mm-hmm. Spider-Woman, you got Silk, you got all the symbiotes, and, like, but then the symbiotes had more symbiotes, you know?
But all those people, going back to what you just said, and this is recent, remember the uproar over all the characters you just named. Mm-hmm. You know, Gwenpool, Spider-Gwen, Silk. You know, it's just like, oh, Tony Stark, Iron Man can't be a woman. It's just like, well, if it's written well, who the hell cares?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that, and I think that's where we differ from a lot of comic readers. I just want it to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, I don't need a Black Cat comic book to, like, reinvent the wheel. Like, I like that character, and I would read a series on that character if it was done good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want a series with that character just because you're trying to fill like a female quotient.
Sure.
And I don't think female readers would want that either. I don't think they want to be pandered to. I don't think African American readers want to be pandered to. They want to be shown, but I don't think they want to be, like, I don't think, I mean, going back to your original Jody Hauser point, she could write Mr. Miracle, she could write Superman, but guess what? The character she's writing right now, she identifies with.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's male or female, doesn't matter. That's why it's a great character. And that's why it's great that she's writing it. You know, if she fell in love with Sandman, and Neil Gaiman was like, yeah, go ahead and write Sandman. Like, it doesn't matter that it's a female writing them.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me, it doesn't. I just want a good story.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Like that, she was a Vertigo editor, and I think she did a one-shot of Phantom Stranger, I want to say, that Allison Kulinny. I think it's Kwinley. But she was a Vertigo editor, and she wrote, I could swear it was the Phantom Stranger, but it was a one shot. And it was a fascinating take on Phantom Stranger. And, like, never, not once did I ever think, a woman can't write Phantom Stranger. Like, no, guess what? A good writer can write any character. Like, I just don't buy into that. Like, Christopher Priest, I could care less that he's black. Like, he's a damn good writer, and he could write anything. Like, don't put him on Black Lightning, for God's sakes, unless that's the character he wants to write. You know what I'm saying?
Allison Quinton.
Have to pander.
Allison Quinton.
There we go. Yeah. Oh my God, it's such a good issue.
Oh, art by Guy Davis. Hello.
That's what drugged me into it, my friend.
Ooh-wee.
It's a good one. Yeah. Highly recommend.
Yeah, that's a good point. God, I had another point based on that, and I can't remember. Oh, well.
It isn't the 70s anymore, you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
or the
yeah.
80s. Like, I love what Milestone's doing. I love what Lion Forge is doing. But an author of whatever race or gender, they don't have to write in that pigeonhole if they don't want to. If they do, if they have a voice and they have a story regarding whatever topic, yeah, go ahead and write. Like, I just want somebody passionate writing about X topic. I don't care.
You know what the problem is? All that shit is so entrenched in American culture that it's difficult for a lot of people to differentiate one from the other.
I don't think it's American culture, because remember the 2001 AD documentary?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
About the first female Judge Dredd writer?
Yep.
How she just got slammed. You go back and read her stories, they're pretty good, and she had a good hand on Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy. But see, I don't buy into that shit. So I never have.
Well, that's because you and I are true comic fans, and we just want to read some mother effing comics.
I was raised by a very strong woman, so she didn't take beef from anyone, including my dad. So guess what? Like, both of us have always been like, you do you. I think you're the same way. Just like, yeah, get out there, kick some ass. Mm-hmm. I want to read your good comics. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you, right? I can guarantee you, artists are the same way. You look at like Phil Jimenez's art; it's always spectacular. But when he does Wonder Woman or he does Aquaman, there's something a little different. It's a little bit more special. And for whatever reason, those two characters talk to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Man, he seems so excited. I don't know what they showed at C2E2, but who is it? Kelly Sue DeConnick that's doing that Wonder Woman book for Black Label? And Phil Jimenez is drawing. He was so excited in that video that I watched.
Oh, yeah?
Hell yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
But see, like, that kind of thing is awesome for me, dude, you know? Like, to know that a creator is just so excited about what it is that they're working on. Like, that makes me want to read it.
There are artists and writers that I just personally don't care, or their projects have not connected with me. But knowing, like, Kelly Sue DeConnick has that much of a grasp on Wonder Woman, now I sort of want to read Wonder Woman. You know, and I'm the same way with Marguerite Bennett.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know,
I love her.
I like whatever it was, the A-Team, Avengers, whatever it is, Avengers 8, the all-woman Avengers team that she did. That was fantastic. But
yeah,
then I read umpteen different titles from her, and they just didn't connect with me for whatever reason.
Yep.
And that's probably why I never gave her Aftershock stuff a try. I never did.
And so, and like, that's the only reason I'm picking up Domino today, because Gail Simone's writing that.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with Gail Simone.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I don't really care. Yeah. I mean, like, Domino's fine, but, like, I don't really care. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But she's proved herself.
Yeah, but she's proved herself, so of course I'm going to pick it up.
Yeah. And even on team books. She's one person that can write a team book, and everybody's voice has something different about it.
Oh, she's so good. Were you the one that shared with me that article about, or it was an article, maybe it was like a tweet storm, about when she either pitched or got chosen to do Secret Six?
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly. Like, that's a good story.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's a good story. Matter of fact, we got to think... the Dreamboat himself, my brother, Julian.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the one that really turned me on to that. He was reading Secret Six. And
that was a great title.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not going to read this. Like, I don't give a crap about Catman. Because I knew Catman from, like, Batman. You know what I'm saying?
And you knew him from Cataclysm.
Yeah. He was just garbage. And so I'm like, I don't want to read a book about this guy. But, you know, he talked about it. I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And ever since then, Gail Simone, she's my girl.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And there's a lot of stuff like that. Like, Jesus Sayaz, did he draw Secret Six? Did he draw portions of it? Because I remember seeing him on Checkmate, Greg Rucka's Checkmate. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I'm just like, oh my god, I'll follow that dude anywhere. So all of a sudden, when he pops up on like Lemire Swamp Thing and like a few Marvel titles, I'm just like, yep. Mm-hmm. Like for you, I'm sure you can see probably, god, easily top three artists for B is Marcos Martin.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just because he's the living embodiment of Steve Ditko. He does not copy Steve Ditko, but his influence is Steve Ditko. Just like Phil Jimenez's, you know, you can see George Perez. Like, that's why I love Marcos Martin. And like, for whatever reason, like he says, like, I can follow his art and his art has changed through the years, but there's always a piece of him that's in there. And it just, for whatever reason, like my eye is very attracted to his art style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but oh, Secret Six. Oh, mm-hmm. Yum. Mm.
That was good. And I'm surprised it ran as long as it did, because I don't think it sold worth a crap. But the people that were reading it really liked it.
It made me fall in love with Bane.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
But in there, it made me fall in love with her.
Sure.
She modernized him just enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Bane's a tough one, though, man. Bane is really tough.
He is. For sure.
Bane is really tough.
Can I go through a little Bat Book reading that I've done?
Of course.
I told you I've been on a Batman event kick.
Yes.
So I was going to start No Man's Land. And then I went through a Batman events reading list. And I noticed, oh my god, I do own this, but I thought it was after No Man's Land. But I found two books that were before it. And I finished one of them. I'm halfway through the other one. I finished Contagion. And then I went into Cataclysm. And Contagion? I thought Contagion was pretty fantastic, except, you know, with the new trades. They're the new, like, fuller trades, yep. Like 400, 500 pages, not just the little condensed, like, eight issues a trade. But I thought towards the end, the last, like, six issues had nothing to do with Contagion. It was all, it felt like padding in it. And I was just like, this has nothing to do with the disease. Nothing whatsoever. They just added five issues so they could jack up the price like another $6-$8. But I did enjoy it. I thought it kept the tension and the pace of how are they going to solve this disease that could cripple Gotham.
Right.
And I thought that was very exciting. But like I've read stuff past. But we've talked about Bat Events, how that pretty much turned me off of the Bat books because it was just way too many different titles to pick up. So I have the complete story. So I just dropped every Batman book. But reading Cataclysm, it is a great breath of fresh air. And after Contagion, now I see when I picked up a few issues here and there after No Man's Land, how messed up Gotham was there for, what, 5, 6, 7 years?
Oh, god, yeah. Yeah, those stories ran so long, dude.
And that city was just getting decimated. It's mm-hmm. like every year, like, what else can happen? Oh, great, a freaking earthquake.
You know what's funny though is like how much of that I think like still rings with a lot of people when they think of Batman. Because like if you look at the movies, like the garbage town that Gotham is, it wasn't like, I mean, like it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't always like that terrible until I would say that era.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think comic book readers look back at these bad events as fondly as they do like Nightfall? Or is Nightfall like the end-all be-all, like that will always be ingrained in people's heads because of the breaking of the bat?
Now, you know, I always wonder about that. Because number one, like, I really wonder how far back people go. Like, if they go and pick up Tom King's Batman for the first time, we'll say. Or like Snyder's...
Can we put it in an age cat? Like, let's just say 20 to 25.
I mean, like, yeah, that's who I would say reads comics. I don't think kids read comics anymore. Not in quantity, at least.
I'm saying somebody our age, we're just sort of giving them the credit that there's no way they're picking up Tom King Batman.
For the very first time. Like, they've never read Batman before, yeah.
Right. But like a 20-year-old, that's some dated-ass material.
Sure.
Nightfall and No Man's Land.
Well, like all of that.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
That 10 years of story.
As well as being, what, 20 years old? 25 years old?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I often wonder, like, how far people go back. Like, if they're like, oh, I really like Tom King's Batman, I'm going to go back and read more Batman.
Where would they go? To hazard a guess.
Well, I mean, like, I know where they go. Because whenever people ask for a list of, like, what should I be reading, the list that I always hear from everybody is always the same fucking list. Well,
give it to me.
All right, you need to go read Hush. You need to go read Long Halloween. Go read Batman Cult.
Those kind of things.
And Nightfall.
Okay.
And go read Nightfall.
See, I'll disagree right there. I would take Nightfall off. We're talking 20-year-old. I would take Nightfall off. It's way too dated.
Oh, Court of Owls. That's the other one.
I would put Court of Owls. I would also put Gotham Central. Because that's the first
person I've ever heard say that.
The only reason, it still looks modern, and it's a modern told story. The police procedural is on television all the time.
Sure.
So they can connect with that. And then I would put, God, there was one other one, but it's more current. I would put Batman Year One.
Oh, yeah. That's another
one. Really,
yep.
Yeah. Like that type, you know, Dark Knight Returns. Like those are all, they might be old, but they all have a look that's modern. So I can see a 20-year-old, you'd have to be a really special reader to be like, I got to go back and read this stuff. Even if you presented them with like, here's the first appearance of Batman. I could see that completely throwing a 20-year-old reader. Unless they are so voracious and they, you know, they are hyper-focused on wanting to love that character. Like all of these, you could see in film. So it's like, okay, I can connect with that. But Nightfall, like I can see some of the themes in a film or in the cartoon, but I just, a 20-year-old, I could see that really, really throwing them. Even though I love it, don't get me wrong, but I also grew up during that. So like putting my headspace back into it, I'm all in.
Oh, dude.
But I'm also
I started reading
a 20-year-old.
I started reading Batman like right before Nightfall started. Like a half a dozen issues, maybe. So I'm with you on that, and I get it. And so, you know, I wonder about that too. Like, how much of what I really love in those stories do other people really love? You know, because I like some pretty shitty things. I don't know if you know this, Nick, but there's some stories that I love to fucking pieces. That I tell people about, and they're like, you're just fucking crazy. That's garbage.
I thought I thought you were talking about nacho fries. And I'm like, we both love garbage. Yes.
No, nacho fries are dead to me because they're discontinued right now.
Are they really?
Yeah, they took them off because they were so popular. They're going to give them a rest.
You know what we just did?
What's that?
We touched a unicorn for about 4 or 5 weeks. We were riding on that rainbow unicorn. We were slave to that bitch. And they had to take it away. They knew. It's like crack cocaine.
Uh-huh.
You can't give them that much pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I really would love to, because it took me a while to get into Golden Age and, you know, like older comics. It took me a long while.
And, you know, Golden Age is tough.
Without a doubt. But I think if I didn't have that bridge of remembering flipping through really old issues of Batman and Justice League and like old Spider-Man, where it's like you have that touchstone. Any reader can still read Neil Adams' Green Arrow, Neil Adams' Batman, and there's something still provocative and dynamic there. It might be dated. Like if you're reading the, it might be a little dated. But the art is still energetic. And I think that's probably one of the few bridges to take a 20-year-old back into, well, I like Mr. Freeze. What's the first appearance of Mr. Freeze? Whoa, that looks dated. But I do like Mr. Freeze. I'm gonna go and read that. I don't care. You know, or like a podcast like what you do. Or Gotham by Geeks. Like, it takes something like that of like, no, you guys should go back and read the first appearance of Two-Face because this is really, really important. Like, it takes historians to like point this stuff out. And that's when the passionate 20-year-old might be like, it's only 99 cents on Comixology, sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it isn't a coworker. It isn't like a friend. That's their age. That's like, oh, you got to read this comic book from 1959. You know, no, you're not getting that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, like some things are harder than others, right? So, I wanted to fairly recently read like Alan Scott Green Lantern. But here's the problem, Nick. You cannot get that series. If you go on Comixology, they have one issue on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
For a series that mm-hmm. ran for 10 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then I had to find physical copies of those books. And, I mean, I like Green Lantern, but I'm not going to be spending thousands of dollars on, you know, Green Lantern Volume 1 just to read about Alan Scott.
I was just about to say, I'm really getting into, like, looking at all these Western and war comics.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's encouraging is a lot of people are like, I found these in the dollar boxes.
Hmm.
You ain't going to find Alan Scott in the dollar boxes unless the cover's ripped.
Nope.
Right. That is a huge problem.
Well, it's a huge problem for, I think, once you get to a certain point as a comic fan, right? I don't think it's mm-hmm. a huge problem for the majority of people that read comics, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's a huge problem for people like you who want to dive into a character that isn't a B or A list character.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was out for 10 years. Same with Jimmy Olsen. Like, he was out for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, good luck finding him.
Sure.
And not paying an arm and a leg. Or you go on to Comixology and it's like, hey, here's Action 181. And then the next comic is 235.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Like, come on.
And I don't know. Why is that? Like, what's the logic? Because, you know, all those books are in the DC archive. So they've got them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, back then, they didn't give creators anything. So it's not like it's some kind of copyright issue where they can't put out the book for whatever reason.
Right. It's not like they're, you have to pay royalties to X estate.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, and another weird thing with especially Comixology, especially with like the DC Presents or like Brave and Bold, like those 80-page giants, you really have to pay attention to the page count because it says 80 pages or 76 pages on the cover of it. Mm. And then you look at the Comixology page count and it's at 35.
Mm.
So obviously they just kept in the Superman stories or the Batman stories.
Yep.
So all of the cool store, the minor stories at the bottom or on the left or right hand side that you're reading,
mm-hmm.
those are probably not in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when you look at those type of like, especially that era, for whatever reason, Comixology will print them black and white instead of in color.
Huh, really?
Yeah, I've looked through umpteen of those preview pages and I'm like, why is this in black and white? Huh. And I have no idea why that is. I have no clue.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But it's all that era. Yeah, very strange.
There's gotta next be time some I see it,
I'll send you. Maybe. I'll send it over to you just so you can see.
Yeah, send it to me so I can look at it.
Yeah.
If they weren't printed in black and white, so there's no reason why they should be doing that.
No, and I mean, this isn't like a comic from like the early 60s. Hmm. Like, it's a comic that I sort of remember seeing as a young child. You know, it's like mid 70s. So it's strange. Unless they were just pulling them out of the big phone books and that's what they were scanning in. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's very possible. Mm-hmm.
Any good Comixology sales going on there? Comixology Master?
The Road to Action. That's a big sale right now.
Okay.
I haven't found anything that like is uber on sale. Like, they do have a lot of retro comics, which is awesome. I think they have like about 200 of the vintage actions, which look really, really good. The other, well, just today they have the new batch of the Marvel collections,
mm-hmm.
which I still think I'm right on. I don't care what you guys are talking about. I think this is boosting up numbers. I think they're combining up their digital sale numbers of graphic novels so that they can boost up the actual total amounts, including digital sale. Because why the hell? And I mean, I've been sort of tracking it. The only thing on these Marvel collection, the 99 centers, it's like as soon as it happens on Wednesday, Thursday, usually. And the ones that you see on those 2 days are the ones that are coming out in comic book stores the same week on Wednesday. And I don't care what anyone, I don't care what Marvel says. There's no way they aren't padding those numbers. So all of a sudden it just looks like, oh my God, look at all of our trade sales. Not wink, wink, digital sales, trade sales, but just, I think they're just bulking them all up and saying, look how many trades we sold this week. Because why would they be giving them away? I mean, they're cutting the knees out from under all of the stores. And if people really paid attention, like all of a sudden, like you're getting an epic collection that came out today on Comixology, and not all of them are there. Don't get me wrong. Not all of them, but like this week, you see an epic collection that's whatever, $19.99, and it's available the same exact day as you can go and buy the physical copy for 99 cents. Why the hell would they ever do that? They've never, ever done that.
All right, so I don't care. So let me say this.
Yes.
Before,
you tell me. Before, you tell me, Mr. Marvel.
Before I say this, Tales from the Crypt sale.
Yep, the EC collections.
Hop on that. And while you're in there, The Vault of Horror and Weird Science. All right. Now that that's out
I was going to say, why wouldn't you mention the science fiction ones?
Yeah,
oh my gosh,
Weird Science is really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I talked about this on the other show I do today.
Uh-huh.
Because it's been like a hot topic in a lot of circles. And Marvel addressed this supposedly at C2E2. So what seems
that was a panel I could not get into.
No, it was not at the panel. It was not at the panel.
Okay, because they had a Marvel panel at C2E2.
Yep.
And the only way you could get into it is like if you had a Marvel credit card.
Yep.
Or you had that Marvel Unlimited
Plus
Premier, whatever the hell it was called.
Yep.
Like it was a special wristband that got you into it. Which I'm like, this is a little crazy to be doing. Like, okay.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a perk of being a Plus member, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if you're like that big a Marvel fan, I guess that's worth it. It's not that much, though, is it? It's like $30 extra a year.
Yeah, and you get like an action figure and a pin or something like that.
Like, that's probably all right. Anyway, now he talked about this at the retailer summit, which happened before C2E2 opened.
Yeah, Thursday.
The Thursday, because one of the retailers asked about it, and what he said was that
who's he?
CBC pronouns. Cebulski.
Okay.
The editor in chief. He said that he was going to look into it, and see like what they could do to fix it, whether that was part of the contract or what. Because according to him, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be able to just do the 99-cent trades.
So the person at Marvel who is in charge of digital stuff is not communicating with Cebulski. This is the first time Cebulski's ever heard of this.
Apparently.
Even though it's been going on for 4 weeks at that time.
Apparently.
Okay. Sure.
This is what he said. Look, I don't know. Okay, the guy just got there. Okay, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, sure.
Right? But here's the thing, though, Nick. Like, if you go to a comic shop, the comic shop doesn't have to sell you a book at full price.
No, they do not.
Right? Like, there's shops that will automatically discount. And, like, the day they get the books in, they'll put a sticker on it 25% off.
Or guess what? If you have a pull list, you might get that sweet 5% discount. Well, that you can't get anywhere else.
Some stores, it's more. My local shop does, I think, 15. There's some stores that I've seen go up to 20.
Yeah, my store does 20.
Yeah.
But still, that isn't DCBS.
It's right. It's not.
That is an Amazon. Correct. That is an in-stock. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So.
Correct. And that's the issue I had when we talked last, when I told you about this new shop that I found, right? Mm-hmm. It's like all the books at full price. And like, I was already there, so I just bought it. But like, I could have just gone home and
like
ordered
a sucker.
It. Like a sucker. Full price. But here's the difference.
And I will say, it's strange that you can't, if you were in Walmart, I know you're banned from Walmart. I totally, okay, let me switch that up. Target. If you were in Target, because I don't want to have a Walmart discussion
Target
again.
Target accepts my ID.
Legionnaires, go listen to why Martin is on the most wanted Walmart list. Okay, say you're in Target. You could pull something up from a competitor on your phone and walk up to customer service and be like, can you match this price?
Sure.
Yes, sir, I can match that price. Or sometimes they even beat that price by a certain percentage. A comic book store is the only place you're not allowed to do that. Which is crazy.
Sure.
It's crazy. Like, I get, even if they don't want to give you the Amazon or in-stock trade price, guess what? If I'm asking, I might be a pain in the ass, but at least you can be like, I can't honor 33% off, but I could give you 20%. And then at least you feel like you won.
Hell yeah.
And the comic book store is still keeping your business. But at this point, I don't know anybody who would walk into a comic book store and not feel like you're going to get so scoffed and mocked in your face as soon as you show them your phone.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, it's the only business that, like, they are going to ridicule you for doing something like that. Shit, I would even feel better if I brought in a Burger King coupon to McDonald's and be like, hey, can I have the price of the Whopper for a Big Mac? And I'm pretty sure the manager, they might give you a look, but the manager would be like, yeah, give it to him for that price.
I think that whatever. McDonald's does that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, even fast food fucking restaurants would do that.
Yeah, I agree. But so here's the difference. So from my understanding of the way things work,
yes, tell me.
When a comic shop places an order, they pay for that order up front.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they have to sell these books or they're going to lose money. When a book is put on Comixology, the publisher isn't paying anything. Comixology isn't paying anything. It just goes on the website. When a sale is made for that book, the publisher gets a cut of that book.
And so does Comixology.
So that's what the difference is.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's one file that's being repeatedly sold to customers.
Correct. Yes. So what I talked about on Comic Talk today was that it is like comics used to be sold when we had a newsstand market, which no longer exists.
Yeah. Right, you'd rip off the title.
Correct.
The title on the cover and send that back.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the problem is the industry is in a tough place because it has kind of put itself in that tough place.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
And I'm sure if the retailers, when they stopped that business model, if the retailers bitched and moaned about it, then I'm sure that business model would still be in effect today.
Sure.
But I can guarantee you the publishers were just like, hey, we'll give you an extra 5% off. You just can't send this shit back. We'll give you a little bit extra off.
That's exactly what it was. That's how the direct market started. People began purchasing books directly from publishers. The deal was you'll get a 10% discount, 15% discount, you just can't send them back.
Which, of course, they were like, yes.
Yeah, of course they were.
Look at the discount.
Because back then they were selling 3 million copies on a book. And now they're lucky to sell 20,000.
If they're lucky.
If they're lucky.
Yep.
So that's the difference.
And you know what I did? Let's go off on a tangent. I wanna unpack tangents. This a little bit. You tell me, because I hope you have some. One question. Did you ever subscribe to some comic book titles?
Hell yeah.
That's why we're both on this comfy couch love seat, bitch.
Awesome. Right. $12 a year? Bam, sign me up.
Hell yeah. Oh my God. They're sending them right to your door. And every once in a while, they'll even do like, buy two titles, get three.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, Mom, where's your checkbook? Let's do this. Oh my God. Okay, I have to tell you, I had on Marvel, I had Spider, because you know me, the more heroes, the better. Mm-hmm. I've always been that way. Mm-hmm. Especially when this was before I was making any money. I was babysitting, maybe, at this time, mowing lawns, maybe. But it would be like, for my birthday, my mom would be like, what do you want? And especially if I opened up that damn comic book and it was like, you know, whatever it was, like one title for $12.25, two titles for $11 each, three titles for $10 each. It's like, oh. So then I would go back to my mom and I would like, I would X off on the little checklist. And I'd be like, can I get three comic books? And she'd be like, yeah, tear that out and give it to me and I'll mail it away. Oh my God. One year I had Spider-Man Marvel team up because I'm getting two heroes for the price of one. And of course I love Spider-Man, so I have to have that. Spider-Man Marvel team up. Marvel 2-in-1, and then I had, I think it was the Defenders. And those were coming in the brown paper that the mailman could care less that you're getting these valuable comics, so he would bend them in half and shove them into your mail slot. They didn't care.
They didn't care.
But guess what? I was so young, I didn't care.
I didn't care either.
Oh, my God. It was the best. And then later on, I think it was a couple of years later, I did the same thing, but I did it on DC. So I was getting the Doug Munch. Is that his name?
Yep.
Or Doug Monk?
I think it's,
I've heard it both ways.
Munch or Mensch.
Okay, Mensch Munch. I was getting the Kelly Jones Munch Batman. And then I was getting... I know. And I was getting Detective, and I want to say JLA. And all three of those were being sent monthly, and those were in... DC was different. They sent them in clear plastic. So as soon as you got it, you could like flip it over and see the cover. And oh, it was so beautiful. But the Marvel, when you took out the like brown paper and you like, I wouldn't open it up. I would like bend the comic book so I can sort of see in there a little bit and get like a preview before like pulling it out. But just the preview of like, what is that? Who is that Iron Fist with Spider-Man? Is that Ben Grimm with like Adam Warlock? Who is that? Oh God. It was, I've never had that much joy probably ever, even with the invention of Amazon shipping shit to your house every fucking day of the week. I mean, I got some beautiful Batman statues. And even when I got my Sandman statue, which was a shit ton of money. I don't think, and that's why I have to be quiet because I don't want my wife to hear this. I don't think that stuff even came close to me running out every month for that $1.50 comic or whatever the price was, $1.25, $1.99. I don't remember, but it was still like, oh my God, the excitement. Or one of the best things was going on like a family vacation. And then you come home and there's all three of those comics just sitting there. Don't know how long they've been there, but they're just sitting there waiting for you to rip those mother effers. And I still have some up in my long boxes. I could take a picture of them right now. The brown paper is still around them. The nice. Ones that came, the DC ones that came in the clear plastic that I carefully cut with scissors so I can get the comic book out, that's still in there. But then you read like the shipping label and it would be like Detective, whatever it is, 152. So even without opening that bag up, it was like, oh, I have a detective book. Oh my God.
So the there were three books that I subscribed to.
All at the same time?
Yeah, at the same time.
Oh, that's okay.
So as you remember, early on in my comic book purchasing history, I used to go to up the street, like literally up the street. It's like a block and a half to this little Korean newsstand place, that had the little like breakfast thing, the little old Korean man, Mr. Musagi. I don't know what his name was.
Mm-hmm.
They had breakfast there and like comics and magazines. So of course, like, like the popular stuff I could definitely get there. Right. So like Batman, Detective, Avengers, X-Men, stuff like that. But there were books that I wanted to read that I couldn't get there. And so until I found that comic shops were a thing, and I can go there and get books, I would subscribe to a couple. So here are the books that I would get in the mail.
Ooh.
Number one is Quasar.
Mm-hmm.
Quasar was my jam.
Oh my God. Finally.
I also subscribed, oddly enough, to Nightwatch.
Dang.
Yeah. I don't know. There was something about Nightwatch that I really liked, so I subscribed to that. And the last one was Nova.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep. So those three.
You love the cosmos. You've always been in love with the cosmic.
I'm telling you, bro.
But all I totally see all three of those. The only way you've ever seen Nova or Quasar would be in like your Korean place. Or when I used to go to a pharmacy, Belmont Pharmacy, and they would have the spinner rack. The only way I would ever see those two characters is if they were in a Marvel 2-in-1 or team up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or guesting on Avengers.
Sure.
Like, you never saw their solo title. You never even knew they had a solo title. Yeah, good call on those.
Mm. Good stuff.
Now, was this bagged or was this in the brown paper?
It was in the brown paper, bro.
Oh, wasn't that the best?
It was the best.
Oh, it was. God.
And I even had instructions with my mail person to not bend the comics. So he always left them standing up in my mailbox.
Look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, I didn't. Those things should be worth twice as much. If I sold those to like a Chris Campbell or a Mike Myers, just the smell alone with that paper, they should be paying me twice the value. Because that paper is such a provocative smell. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Good stuff.
Mm-mm-mm. It is good stuff, dude. Dang. You know what doesn't smell? Our digital collections. No, that's what doesn't smell.
They need to do like smell-o-vision.
Just make incense. So I can just light some incense. Like, yeah, there's the old vintage smell.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's the glossy paper. As soon as they went glossy paper, it lost some.
Yeah, they ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
They ruined it.
Did you buy any of the digital 99 centers today?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
I thought I would have sold you on at least the one with Blink.
No, I didn't even get to it, dude. I didn't get to it. I left work early, actually, today. Which was nice.
I know you did.
Yeah, which was nice. But
that is.
No, I got home and I ate and I just sat on the couch and I watched some videos on YouTube. And then I went ahead and read a bunch of stuff, or reread, I should say, because I did an interview tonight for Comic Talk Today. So I wanted to have this stuff fresh in my mind. And,
sure.
And then it was dinner time, so I made dinner.
How was RedTube? You didn't tell me.
What's that?
You said you came home and watched RedTube.
YouTube!
Oh, sure.
I don't know what RedTube is, but it sounds sketchy.
Yeah, sure you know. It is. You bet it is. It's got all the sketch. Can I tempt your tummy with a taste of nuts of honey on a couple of 99 centers?
I don't know, man.
Because
you're talking about RedTube and then nuts. I'm a little worried right now.
I'll send you some pictures. I know there's a segment of our listening audience that loves when you buy stuff. So can I tempt your tummy?
All right, let's buy something.
Okay. And this, I think you might be interested in, because I know you're reading another one of the books. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. The writer, Chip Zdarsky.
All right, here's the problem.
Okay, all right.
I have never liked any book that Chip Zdarsky has written until
Here comes but or except Marvel 2-in-1. Yeah, I know,
exactly,
I know.
Exactly.
But maybe this is where he cut his teeth. I'm not sure. I've never read it before. But it's only 99 cents. But the two that should be a damn given is the Avengers Epic Collection. Mm-hmm. That should be a given. As well as the Avengers. If you don't buy for 99 cents, I'm going to kick you right in the nuts. The Avengers Masterworks. Did you even look at that?
Yeah. I'm actually looking at that right now.
That is some glorious John Byrne. And I think Perez does a few of the issues too.
Let's not forget that these books, while 99 cents, cost me 84 cents because I'm an unlimited subscriber.
That is true. That is true.
So the fact that I haven't purchased anything today, damn shame on me.
It is.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. I am buying something right now. I am buying Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. Oh. I am buying Cable Volume 2, The New Year Mutants.
Oh, there's some link right there.
I am buying, believe it or not, Gwenpool, because it's 99 cents. Well, 84 cents.
Okay.
Gotcha. And I'm going to buy the Avengers Masterwork.
Oh, there you go. That can I'm just going to circle back around. That Epic Collection, let me just throw it out. It's Avengers. It's Defenders. It's Rick Buckler, which you know I have a soft spot. Mm-hmm. And it's both of the Buscemas. John and Sal. And it has Cosmic Cube. It has Zodiac in there.
There's
It's 70s goodness.
There's some Infantino art in there, too.
I'm just throwing it out.
Steve Gerber, Tom DeFalco. You know I gotta get on that. So anyways, it's mine for 84 cents.
445 pages for 84 cents. I mean,
you can't go wrong.
Even if you own half of that, it doesn't matter. You put that right in the pocket.
Yeah.
You're in.
Yeah, you're a damn fool. All right, what's in this Epic Collection? I need to get this. I'm going to get this in.
Yeah, you should get it. Englehart, it's Thor versus Hulk. Come on.
All right, yeah. All right, cool. Sold to me.
Jerry Conway.
All right. Those are bought. You know what? You know what's cool too, by the way? So I've been praising all these other discounts that I've been getting.
Mm-hmm.
I think they must have started this like last week. Because now you also get a 15% discount on new books.
Whoa. That's a good discount, dude. Are you sure, during the retailer's convention, when people are asking C.B. Cebulski about this, are you sure that the comics, which I never thought I would say, is actually leading, they're on the front line of how to approach digital stuff? Because these 99-cent collections offering 15% if you're an unlimited, but that's just like being a subscriber to a brick and mortar place. It like, this is how you have to approach your digital business. And I really, I thought it'd be video games. I thought video games would be taking the forefront and being like, oh, well, sorry, Tarjay. Sorry, GameStop. Yeah. Guess what? This is a digital game and we're going to offer it at half off. Cause you know why? We could just send it directly to them and we don't have to print out a cover and we don't need a plastic case to stick it in. We could just send it directly to them. So why not give them 50% off?
Yep.
Like it's just the same digital content being sent out. I mean, both me and you have had this discussion, 20 times about it's the same damn digital file. This is crazy. Why am I paying the same price, but offering 15%? If you're, and I mean, you buy quite a bit. So at some point, halfway through the year, you have to look at your like Comixology Unlimited subscription and be like, I sort of paid that off in 6 months with my 15%. I pretty well paid off Comixology Unlimited.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And that includes sales, right?
Yeah, dude. It includes like everything. Every single book. It's 15% off if you're an unlimited subscriber.
I think comics might be, and granted, hey, do I think Comixology could be doing this if it wasn't the behemoth of Amazon behind them? No. There's no way. But I think Amazon has a pull that they can get away with it. And it gives Marvel almost this deniability. Like, well, what can we do? It's Amazon. Guys, what can we do? We're there for you. We love the brick and mortar. You know that. But if this is how Amazon wants to play, and, you know, what would retailers say, really? Everybody knows that, you know, Amazon's the big boy now.
Yep.
So they have to play with them. I'm just shocked, to be honest with you. I thought it would be video games or music. I mean, I thought music might come around. I think music now is lagging way behind comics in regards to digital type stuff. Pretty crazy.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Killer deal, though. I mean, like, on a $3.99 book, if I'm saving, what does that come out to, like, 45 cents? 50 cents?
Mm-hmm.
No, wait, hold on. It's 61 cents.
Oh, okay.
And I'm paying...
That's better than 15%.
Is it? That's 15%.
Oh no, you're right. Yeah, I was thinking $2.99. My bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the new books are $3.39 or $3.31, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all I need to do is buy 10 books, and that pays for my unlimited subscription.
Yeah, true.
Killer.
Except the only bad thing, which I'm shocked Amazon hasn't done yet. Comixology is just. As soon as you have to hit that magnifying glass to search for anything, Oh my god, that is effing garbage.
Don't search for anything it's garbage. On Comixology.
No, please don't. Because God forbid you put in like spider space man instead of adding the dash. God forbid. You want everything that ever had spider or man in the title? Yeah, here it is. Like, oh god, can we at least be a little smarter with our search?
Mm-hmm.
God forbid.
I mean, at least they have the breakdown, right? So you can do like issues or bundles or series or publishers
or graphic novel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to have good search, man. You need to have exactly what your person wants to look for within the first 10 or 15 results.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Google is number one search engine. And Comixology
sucks. Did you say
sucks.
Google? Yeah. You say Google or DuckDuckGo?
Well, I mean, I use DuckDuckGo, but Google still has better search results.
Yes.
Yep. Plus, they can personalize your results because they read your email, so they know what you're looking for.
Here we go.
Yeah. Well, you know,
Legionnaires, this is where I mute myself and I pick the string and I wrap it around the top that is Martin and just pull it and let him go.
No, don't do that because I'll talk about it forever.
I know.
Matter of fact, I'm a little worried because I'm talking to a comic creator who has very mm-hmm. similar views about this kind of stuff as I do. And I'm worried that when I have him on the show, we're just going to talk about that for an hour.
I would like that. I think that's fun. Sometimes it gets into sketchy, paranoid views, but I still think that they're valid views.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like when I close my Facebook account.
It's important. Yeah. And then still photos of you are being shown. Or how Facebook is pulling out pictures of your wife in a bikini from 8 years ago. And then she's being served up as an image for an email that just happens to go out by a Facebook partner. Oh, who would have thought that could happen?
Look, I can't help what she does.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's some scary Big Brother crap.
Oh, dude, I downloaded my Facebook data. Okay, it was 6 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about that because I don't want to bore the listeners. But that's when I was like, nope, closing this bitch down.
I'm winding right now, listeners, I'm winding the top. Do you see me? I'm winding the top. Well, all that, here we go. Well, all that 6 gigs of information, that must have been a lot of posts and pictures that you put up there.
It was, but there's also call logs and messages and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all your private information, so you know, of course, as soon as you deleted your account, all that information just went away.
Supposedly.
It went with you.
Look, listen. They say it all gets deleted within 90 days.
Look, listen up. Listen.
Here's the thing.
Yeah,
I'm not naive. Okay, I'm gonna assume 90 days never means never. Okay,
I would assume 90 days from the time that you get a lawyer involved. That's sure. When that 90 days starts.
I'm gonna assume 90 days means never. But the point is, from now on, I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know if I just let it hang there, I know you're right into the next tangent. I love it. Ferretti, I love it.
I'm considering getting an original page.
Oh, shoot. We just took a hard left turn. Yes. All right. Screw DuckDuckGo and Facebook. Zuckerberg, get out of here. Original page, you say?
Yeah.
Do tell.
I haven't decided yet. I don't know if you know that I like the New Mutants. Have you heard of this before?
I have.
Okay, I like the New Mutants. And there's a New Mutants book out now. Who writes this book? Is it Rosenberg that writes it? I don't remember. But Adam Gorham does the art. And I love Adam Gorham stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
And he just put up pages from issue 2. And there's a two page is a two page spread. What's a one page? Is it a one? It's not a one page spread. You're not spreading anything. It's one fucking page.
I would say that would be a splash page.
All right, a splash page. He put up page 20 just now.
Ooh.
And it's fucking Warlock. And I love fucking Warlock, and I want this fucking page.
Ooh. Is it in your ballpark?
Yeah, his pages are not that expensive. This one is $300 bucks.
Oh God, that ain't bad at all for a whole page of Warlock. Holy Christ!
Most of the pages for this issue are like about $200 bucks.
I would think. I honestly, I would have thought that page was closer to $500.
Oh, I should.
Being a splash page.
I should say for anybody that is not a New Mutants person. I'm talking about New Mutants Warlock, not Infinity Wars Warlock.
Adam Warlock.
Yeah, not Adam Warlock.
Because you wouldn't buy Adam Warlock. You'd buy Magus. Because you like the Afro.
I do like Magus.
Yeah, we all know that.
I do like Magus.
You like the Afro. You can't help it.
Dude, how could you not like the Afro?
Right.
You don't like the Afro, no soul.
For sure. Please tell me Warlock, our Warlock, New Mutant Warlock. Please tell me he's using, what is it, first person speak? Second person speak?
Of course, it's Warlock.
Of course. I just didn't know. I didn't know anything.
No, the book's good. The book's very interesting.
No, I'm saying for the page you're interested in.
Oh, well, I mean, there's no dialogue on the page.
Okay. I just didn't know. I didn't know.
Here, I'll send it to you. Can I save this page? This big cartel website just.
It is, yeah.
But it's. Is this it?
Now, can I also ask you another question regarding this page?
Yes.
We have our toilet episode primed and ready. All ready to come out of the toilet bowl into people's ear holes. If you're interested in this Warlock page, are we going to hold on to this episode so you don't fall into the Ronnie Baron autographed Batmobile situation that somebody might swoop in and buy this right out from under you?
Oh, that's hilarious. No, this episode will be out like this week probably or next week.
Okay. Just, hey, I have to ask. I have to ask these questions because I don't want you to lose out on this page.
Sure.
It sounds fab. Whoa. All right. Listeners, Legionnaires, I'm looking at this image. You know what this reminds me of? And tell me if the rest of the comic is like this. Is Gorham sort of doing a Sienkiewicz thing?
He's got a similar style, yeah.
For sure. This looks like Demon Bear, dude. Mm-hmm. This is beautiful. Yeah, you better put this episode out a little later so you can lock this one in. It's gorgeous. Yeah, that's nice. That's real nice. If I was made of money, I'd buy it for you. Sadly, C2E2 drained me of all of my monies.
Oh, I have no doubts.
Yeah.
I have no doubts.
But that is gorgeous, dude. Did I tell you at the C2E2 I saw the first Punisher issue?
Did you?
It was slabbed. Oh, I think it was a 6.8. Dennis pointed it out to me, 6.8. And luckily, I didn't see the price until I was ready to walk away, because you know I just wanted to fawn over it. And if I would have known the price, then I would have looked like a complete idiot, not even like, I can afford that. I can never afford that. But pretending like I can afford that, like, oh, God. But no, this is a gorgeous page, dude. I hope you can get it. I hope you reach out to him. Ask for an installment plan if you have to. Who cares?
I just messaged him.
Good. Good, good, good. You need that in your collection.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where mine, as you well know, mine might be Colossus's sister.
Oh, Magic?
Done in that style?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-mm-mm.
Mm. Yes. I know.
Yeah. Ooh, so good. Magic. Dude, you brought me back. You brought me back with that. Now I just want to read Demon Bear again.
Oh.
When I originally got Demon Bear, it was, I was at my first comic book store, and I think I was a sophomore in high school, and my first comic book store is Graham Crackers. It's a chain out here in Illinois.
Yeah. I bought
some. And I knew the owner back in the day when he only had one store, when he finally went from, I think it was Elmhurst, he opened up his second or third store in Naperville where I lived. And I went and I worked for him, and I worked a couple cons with him. I was just pretty much a schlub carrying around long boxes. You know, believe me, I was not wheeling and dealing. I was just a gopher pretty much. But still, I'm in high school, and it might be high school. It might have been eighth grade. I'm not sure. But all I got was like, I got a couple free comic books. Of course, he gave me all of the free comic books that he would have to hand out to any customer. We'd get a big bag of those. So it was all just like, oh, my God, I'm around comics. This is awesome. But, you know, I would talk to him, and, like, he would guide. I think, really, it was being at that comic book store. I think that really guided me to, you know, I would be talking about, and I think this is key for any great comic book store. And even Mark Wade mentioned this in his panel. He said when he ran his comic book store in Indiana, he would have every employee, instead of engaging somebody and try, cause everybody wants to know, you know, what do I buy my kid? What should I get? And he would always engage them with not what comics do you read, but what TV and movies are you into? Like what books do you read? Like not just comics, just like trying to glean what your interests are. So when I was working at Graham Crackers, you know, I might be mentioning like I went to the last James Bond film. And I think that's really how all of a sudden, because I don't ever remember how I got in with like John Sable or Judge Dredd. But I think it was just talking about movies that the employees of Graham Crackers are like, you like Judge Dredd, or you'd like Camelot 3000, or you would like, and I think that's how somebody turned me on to New Mutants. And I remember seeing the Sienkiewicz covers and just being completely like, this is something different. I don't know who this is. I don't know what this team is. Because really, the only other X-Men I ever was involved with was, God, let me think. I just started to get into like the John Byrne an X-Men, but they were already back issues, very, very expensive. And I think I was into like Simonson when he was doing X-Factor. So I really never knew New Mutants, but all I remember is Graham Crackers, and they still do it to this day, which is freaking awesome. Like, they would just collect up the entire series. So that's how I got my Moon Knight and like New Mutants. It was like, hey, here's the entire Sienkiewicz run of Moon Knight, or this is the entire Sienkiewicz run of New Mutants. And that's how I bought Moon Knight and New Mutants.
Nice.
And they would just wrap the entire thing, like 4 inches of comics, and it would be like cover price, whatever it is, value price, whatever it is. And then it would be like marked down like by half. So it always felt like a great deal. But then by working these cons, the owner, Jamie, would just be like, oh, you want that New Mutant that's in your box? Well, thanks for working. How about $5 for that? Or, you know, he would just like dirt cheap. And obviously, you know, he wants to clear out this stuff, yeah, you know, looking back at it. But for a kid to be like, I just got 4 inches worth of Moon Knight, or I got 4 inches and it's freaking Sienkiewicz art of like New Mutants. And it's like, whatever it was, 40 issues. I forget how long his run was. But still, you got all of that for $5. Hmm. And it's just like, oh my God. And he only did it 3 or 4 times for me, but still, like, that memory burned into my head. And that's why I think even to this day, like, there's characters for New Mutants, and I didn't follow them completely, but every once in a while I'll see Warlock, or I'll see, you know, a different mute, and it's just like, oh yeah, I do love that character. Or I'll see Frenchie or Moon Knight, and it's just like, yeah, oh God. And like, I didn't know who Doug Munch is, mm-hmm, but all of us, but looking back at it, it's, oh my God, I think that probably, you know, Batman or Moon Knight was the first time I ever discovered, oh my gosh, this one guy wrote that entire series. Like, wow. Or the entire series that I have at that point. Mm. Weird how it burns in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have to give this New Mutants a try. You're set on a very new road, buddy. I'm looking at Action 1000. I'm looking at picking up 2 issues of New Mutants. Damn it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I'm trying to think.
But mine aren't 84 cents, son. When I go to my comic book store, those issues ain't 84 cents
no,
each.
They're not.
Yeah, you're getting the deal.
You need to get Dr. Star. What's it called? Dr. Star and the World of Tomorrow, I think it's called.
I think you talked about that on a previous podcast.
Kingdom of Love Tomorrow.
That it was very Robinson-ish.
It is Lemire Starman.
Ooh. Mamma mia.
Matter of fact, let me send you this picture here.
Do you own the physical copy?
No, just digital.
Oh, okay. Because I want to. Is that Image?
It is Dark Horse.
Dark Horse. Okay. Because sometimes Image gives you, like, if you ever looked at like Rucka's like Image stuff, there's so much extra material in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to buy a DE.
Oh,
it's hard not to buy the physical bits because that stuff's never put into the trades.
Yeah.
Or it's rare that it's put into the trades.
Where did I save this image, Nick? Oh.
I don't know. I'm waiting for it. Eagerly awaiting for it. Who drew it?
Artist. It is Max Fiumara.
Ooh, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Good.
Yeah, yum.
Oh, there it is. All right, tell me that's not Starman.
It, It's really hard to even get away from that warlock image. All right, let me get a look from it. Dang it. Ooh, Dave Stewart colors. Oh, I like me some Dave Stewart.
Yep. And it's awesome. Even in this issue, when it opens up, it's got a Starman and his son, and Starman's looking through a telescope, and it so reminds me of that James Robinson. When, because you know, he doesn't he live in like the observatory or something?
Mm-hmm. His father does.
Yeah, the dad.
Yep.
It reminds me so much of that, dude.
Okay, I have a question about this. Not that I don't own them. I do own them. But you know how I read. I always from the last Comixology, the oldest Comixology purchases that I have not read from that month. So I never read current stuff that I just bought. I always read, like right now, I think I'm in October or November of 2016. So I've been lapped. But I own Black Hammer, but at the top of this, it says from the world of Black Hammer.
Yep.
Do I have to read Black Hammer before reading this?
Nope.
Oh, so he's just in the universe.
Yep.
Like a Hellboy. Like, oh, he's from the Hellboy universe, but you don't really have to read Hellboy. Yep. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Oh, I'm going to have to pick this up. I like me some Dave Stewart, too.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even, dude, I've been looking at this for how long? 4 minutes? I didn't even realize there's somebody in a hospital bed below him. Jesus. Oh my God, that's awesome. Wow. Yeah, I might have to.
Pick it up.
You know what I trust you with, Martino?
Comic books?
Sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
Comic books, I would say 95%.
Sure.
But sci-fi, you know me with sci-fi and horror. You can pretty much, you nail me about 100% of the time. And this looks like some damn, this looks like some damn good sci-fi.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Is it bad that I want to go read Starman again now?
No, I don't blame you a bit.
God, this looks good. I even like the logo. Put that logo on a shirt? Dude, that's sharp. Mm-hmm. Who did the lettering of that?
I don't want to know
who Nate Pykos is. Probably. I wonder if he did that logo. That's freaking sharp.
Good font.
Dude, I'm hypnotized right now.
It is.
You sent me two
sense.
Great images. No, it is not. Oh my God, that's so good. Bravo, dude. You completely tweaked me. How did you read action? I'm sorry, let's go back 2 freaking hours ago as we loop all the way back to the beginning. Did you read Action 1000?
No, not yet.
Okay, because I know you said Action 1000 inspired you to go buy Superman Savage Dragon.
No, just like the news.
You read it, and news that's about what inspired.
No. Action comes out next week.
Gotcha. Oh, good. Then I can save my ducats for another week.
Yeah. It's been a really good month for comics, dude. A lot of freaking awesome stuff.
Yeah, I would say all three of the big companies have really been slaying it. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yep, it's been good. Got a lot to read
and
this
I
week.
Also,
I've got a lot to read next week.
You know how wonderful it was at C2E2 on Saturday night? We're all exhausted.
I bet.
Probably 4 hours too late. Like, I didn't eat anything that entire day because I was in panels back to back to back. And dinner, we finally ate dinner probably 9:30. So I was running on fumes at that point. But you know how fun it was that before we got our pizza to be sitting in their, you know, their place and to chime in and ask Dennis a question about the new Punisher and him know exactly where I'm going as he looks away from me and we both look over at Ronnie and is like, Yeah, Ronnie. Why don't you like the new Punisher? Explain this. And it was just great to have, like, Red Arms just be like, yeah, let's harass the Baron just a little bit. Just let's really, like, do a deep dive into why you don't like this. And then Dennis was describing scenes from the first arc that I forgot about, and then I was filling in, like, bits that he sort of forgot. Oh, my God. It was just such a wonderful tag team.
That's awesome.
It was so much fun. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm.
Too funny.
I need to find some magic paper. Yeah, mutter effer.
Books of magic?
No, dude. Magic. X-Men magic.
Oh, okay. I was going down the Greg Rucka black magic. Nicola Scott.
I do like that.
As well as Books of Magic.
I also like that.
Yeah. You can tell where my head is.
Let's wrap this up, Nick.
For sure.
Thanks for listening to this oversized episode of The Comfy Couch. With Nick Wetmore, your host. For these festivities. No. Yeah, it's your show, dude. Shut up.
No.
Just. You can find the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Wetmore at Nick Wetmore, because that is his name. You want to find me, a lonely, wholesome, loyal servant of Mr. Nick Wetmore. I'm at Geekbind.
A podcasting magnet at this point.
A slave to the people.
Yeah.
The show is, of course, at Nerdy Legion. NerdyLegion at gmail.com is the email address. Thank you for tuning in. I'm sorry we didn't talk about poop tonight. See you next time.